joined as always by Will Nault. 4 o'clock, another edition of Flames Talk. Pat Steinberg and Matty Rose, the Flames revamped schedule, getting back in action on Saturday when they take on the Edmonton Oilers for a Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. 7 p.m. warm-up, 8 p.m. puck drop. Should be a good one from Edmonton on Saturday night. But, Will, it's always a special day on Thursdays when we get to welcome in our next guest, hey?
Oh, it sure is. Sorry, I didn't know that you guys had lost me and began the show without me. I'm just kidding. Yes, it's always awesome to bring in our next guest as we kick off hour three, like we always do every Thursday. At least we have the last couple of weeks, and we'll continue to do so going forward. Our pal, our buddy, Adnan Virk, joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Virk, I want to start off by apologizing for the absolute egg the Eagles laid for you last Sunday.
Wasn't that horrific? We kept saying, hey, maybe they were born to run, right? Run, Eagles, run. That was your
That's
line,
right.
Will. And unfortunately, Eagles were a disaster. And as we said, they were going to have to run for a lot of yardage. They ran for 95 yards in that game, after averaging 160 per game in the regular season, which was number one in the NFL. And of that 95, I believe there was one run at the end, which was 34 yards. So it was obviously inconsequential. So in a critical game, you got to run for 160. That's your average. You got to go above average to beat an above average team, the Super Bowl winning champions, and you rush for 61 yards. Horrific. So back.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to
Howie Roseman.
I was going to say, it's kind of hard to run when you're down by 25 points, right? I mean, that's not ideal.
And that's one of the issues for the Eagles. They get these early deficits, and you're right. At that point, what are we going to do? Well, you don't have time to run the ball. We got to throw the ball. And Hurts is not going to be successful in terms of his rhythm and his timing and just throwing the ball down the field. And the receivers, in fairness to him, are not elite either, aside from Devontae Smith. Although Troy Aikman looked like he was going to have an aneurysm, the amount of times he kept saying, they got to get the ball to Devontae Smith. He's their number one receiver. He had 916 receiving yards. It's a rookie record in the Eagles. How do they not get the ball to him? But inexplicably, Philadelphia is not able to do so. Howie Roseman, who's the boss, and Hurts will be the starter in 2022. That's unsurprising. I think he's the guy year to year. It's kind of like an employee in a one-year contract. You go, you know what? I'm not willing to commit to him or her for long term, but year to year, let's see. And if they have a good year, we'll have a good performance review, we'll keep him for another year. They've got 3 first-round picks, 15th, 16th, and 19th, I believe. They've got to replenish that offensive line and obviously work on the defensive line if you can as well. They didn't generate much pressure on Brady. There's no elite quarterback, Will, coming out of college this year. So
Maybe
draft a quarterback later on in the rounds if you want. Maybe make a trade if you like. You can really get bold and package those 3 first-round picks for Deshaun Watson if you want to get gutsy. But if not, Hurts will be the guy for the year. And overall, Philadelphia did overachieve. Yes, it was a poor performance. Yes, they did not beat a team with a winning record this year, but I did not think they'd make the playoffs. Even with an extra seed, kudos to them.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, the biggest thing going forward. I was going to ask you about Jalen Hurts and his future, but, you know, you just talked about it there. He is going to be the quarterback for next season. And I think you're right. I don't know if they really had a better option or anything that's different. I mean, yeah, you can trade for a Deshaun Watson or a Russell Wilson, but I'm not sure that that is really in the cards right now. And I think at the same time, you know, Howie Roseman and company probably like to have the quarterback on a rookie contract, which they have right now in Jalen Hurts. And that would obviously dramatically change your pay structure and your pay ladder if you went out and got one of those other two guys. So, yeah, I think that's ultimately what they have to end up doing. And they will do that going forward. And I think the Eagles offseason, like a lot of teams, will be interesting. And, you know, as you mentioned, the 3 first-round picks is where it begins, and they'll be curious to see what they do. But I felt for you on that game, and I was laughing, too. I was watching with a buddy. You mentioned Troy Aikman. He's, you know, 4 minutes to go in the third quarter. It's 31-0, and he says, you know, Joe, I wonder if they're going to get Brady out of the game here. In the third quarter, they're going to take Brady out of the game? Like, what are you talking about? I thought that was hilarious. And you know, then they kept going and kept hammering the dead horse in the fourth quarter. And of course, Brady didn't come out of the game, because as much as you want to protect him and not get him hurt, there's no way Brady's missing a quarter of a playoff game. I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, odd comment there. I mean, you're right. If there's like 4 minutes left, okay, fine, I get that. But a full quarter, a bit, I mean, you never know. And of course, if Philadelphia came to life and scored a couple quick touchdowns, it would be more annoying to Brady to think, wow, you took me out of the game, and now I'm going to get revved up again. Like, no, keep me in there. I'm here to play, and, you know, if injuries happen, I'll battle through it. But, yeah, that's not going to happen in that situation. I thought you were going to mention the clip that I saw of Aikman, which was hilarious. Him and Joe Buck were forecast. forecasting and predicting the next game coming up, which is, of course, the Cowboys and 49ers, which was an instant classic. You and I and everybody else said that's going to be the best game of the weekend, and it was. And Aikman made a comment about, like, oh, man, what show's calling that game? So, clearly not happy. An NFC clash, 49ers against his Cowboys, and his boy Tony Romo gets to call the game on CBS. It really felt like old school 90s, like in the CBS Madden Summer. I used to always call those great NFC games. So I thought Troy was annoyed in more ways than one.
I saw you, and I, you know, you certainly weren't alone. We talked about it on the show the first couple of days of the week. I mean, you know, the expanded playoff is one thing, and I don't know if that's the main reason, because it wasn't just seven seeds that got their teeth kicked in. But you look back on that weekend, Adnan, and there wasn't a lot of entertaining games. I mean, they were more blowouts than anything in wild card weekend for the NFL. And, you know, certainly on paper, this next weekend sets up way better. But in terms of what we saw last weekend, it wasn't that great of football.
No, if you're a football fan, and certainly even if you're a sports fan, those two weekends, wild card weekend and now this weekend, are generally the best it gets. I mean, the conference championship games are like two games. Like you said, one could be a dud, one could be bad. The Super Bowl can be great, sometimes super bore. But just by the theory of having this many games, you should get a bunch of money games. And unfortunately, only two of the five was riveting entertainment. Other than that, it was blowouts. You know what I mean? The Patriots didn't show up. The Eagles didn't show up. And the Steelers clearly looked outclassed. And Philly and Pittsburgh, both seven seeds. Okay, this is why we don't want more teams in the playoffs, because the diluted teams and obviously the structure of it. But, yeah, it was disappointing as a football fan, because you go, hey, I'm planning my whole weekend to be able to watch these games. I did love the fact, by the way, Saturday started late, like the 4:30 game for the Bengals, and then 8:15 was Bills. I love that, because, okay, now you get the whole Saturday afternoon. I know it's different, obviously, where you are, but the Saturday afternoon, you kind of got to do, you know, get groceries, do stuff with the kids, whatever, and then you can walk into the football, and then Sunday's a triple header, and then Monday Night Football was good to have. So I'm such a nerd. I look at the schedule, Will, and I go, okay, this Saturday, 4:30 and 8 Eastern, and then on Sunday, it's 3 and 6:30. So it's a good time to still get stuff done, and like I said, I'm with you. I think this week it should be better games. The game that you can't miss. Again, if you're like, listen, I can't watch all four games, I've got other commitments. Well, I cannot wait, bro, for Bills Chiefs. I mean, Sunday at 6:30, that is going to be an absolute slugfest. I think it's going to be high scoring and highly entertaining. The line right now is Chiefs -2.5. How about that? That's how people are so excited about this Bills team, where Allen looked out of his mind, seven possessions, seven touchdowns, and he threw for five of them. I don't know if I have the guts quite to call an upset, but man, I would be great to see the Bills beat the Chiefs. I'd be so happy for the people of Buffalo.
Yeah, I was laughing. Of course, Brian Daboll is in consideration for some head coaching jobs. I was laughing at all those on Twitter who were saying that, you know, Brian Daboll is going to walk into a Zoom press conference or interview this week and say, you know, open up with, well, did you see the game last Saturday? Because that's my resume, 7 for 7. How are you?
Yeah, he's a trendy pick right now in a couple of places. The latest rumors I've seen, it's the New York Giants, and the really hot one is the Miami Dolphins. And the Dolphins, when you go, okay, you got to deal with an owner in Stephen Ross who likes to have his word out there, and clearly I don't think Tua Tagovailoa is the answer, and the owner has made it clear he'd love to go get Deshaun Watson. So could you imagine if they got Brian Daboll as a head coach, who clearly is a very gifted offensive mind. He was very good in college. I remember when I was covering college football, I believe he was Saban's offensive coordinator in Alabama. And so all of a sudden, imagine if they go get Deshaun Watson, Daboll, that's a different story. Or Daboll comes in and his whole mandate is to fix Tua, get the best out of Tua, make him healthy, make him durable, and make him the elite quarterback that we hope he's going to be. Other options, as I mentioned, could be the Giants. But it raises the larger issues. Like, you know, what a challenge this must be. These coordinators are up and trying to get another job. Naturally, they're looking for a promotion. And at the same time, you've got this huge task at hand. So I can't imagine what it's like for Sean McDermott. He's got Brian Daboll, who's a candidate in two places. Leslie Frazier, his defensive coordinator, is a candidate. Off the top of my head, I can't remember where, but I know he's interviewed somewhere. Might have been Chicago. I know Denver looks like they're zeroing in on Dan Quinn, former Falcons head coach, Cowboys defensive coordinator. So I always wonder about that. Like the Chiefs, Andy Reid's got his guy, Steve Spagnuolo, ready to go. And I wonder for the Bills, Sean McDermott saying, all right, boys, let's win one more, then you guys can go ahead and go get your other fancy jobs.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm with you, by the way. That's my game of the weekend. Adnan Virk joins us every Thursday here on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960. Logan, you got some stuff on the NFL for Virk.
Yes, you guys might be going with Chiefs-Bills. I'm curious a lot about the Rams-Buccaneers matchup that we see on Sunday as well, Adnan. I've learned, and me and Will mentioned this earlier on when we were talking about some of these games. It's even as good as the Rams have been and as scary as Aaron Donald and Von Miller might be, how many times over our NFL watching lives have we bet against Tom Brady only to be proven wrong? I feel like this is another one of those classic situations where I feel like there's no chance Donald's going to be all over him. Miller's going to be there. You know, he's already won a Super Bowl, so is he that motivated? But it's just one of those things. I can't bring myself to actually bet against Tom Brady.
No, I'm with you, Logan. And right now, we taped earlier this morning, GM Shuffle, me and Michael Lombardi. The line was Bucks minus three. And Mike said to me, if you're betting the Rams, you might want to wait a little bit because that line's about to go to minus 2.5. And I really think strongly, as you do or are alluding to, the Rams can win this game. There's no doubt about it. Start of the year, I picked Rams-Chiefs Super Bowl. The Rams dismantled the Cardinals. I mean, among the games that were absolute blowouts, Stafford was efficient, but really it was the Rams defense that did a number on Kyler Murray and just completely neutralized what Arizona and Cliff Kingsbury were trying to do offensively. And I'm with you. That Bucs offensive line, Wirfs is out. Okay, I think Fournette's coming back. And Evans and Gronk had great games against the Eagles. But I could totally see a storyline where Brady, under duress, just isn't able to lead the Buccaneers because that Rams defense is just so stout. And I could see Stafford putting up some good numbers and the Rams win. But you're right. Anybody who's doing that would be foolhardy to ignore Tom Brady, what he's done in this league. It felt like to me at the start of the playoffs, they'd win a game, especially against my Eagles, clearly Philadelphia overmatched. But I was like, next round, watch out. I will call the Rams to win. And like you, maybe it's foolish to do so to bet against Brady, but I like this Rams team a lot.
Another topic that me and Will discussed a little bit earlier, and I'd be curious to get your feel on, is how much Deebo Samuel has changed things for the 49ers and really become such a valuable piece of their offense. He did it again last week. He's so key. I think everybody by now has seen the really cool mic'd up footage of him on the sideline saying, look, give me the ball. I'm going to get it in the end zone. He goes ahead, he backs that up, and he was just fired up after the play. And I wonder, we probably thought of George Kittle as the biggest offensive weapon that Jimmy Garoppolo and company have had, but it has to be Deebo Samuel at the top of the list now, but I don't even know if him at the top of his game is enough to get over this Packers team on Saturday.
It's something, Logan, that helped dull the pain of the Eagles losing was to see the Cowboys lose, especially in such heartbreaking fashion. That definitely warmed the cockles of my heart. So I'm pulling hard for the San Francisco 49ers team. Jimmy G is hurt, playing with a thumb injury. Apparently it's pretty severe. He's going to try to give it a go. We all know Trey Lance would be a huge come down. I know he's a number three pick, but he hasn't played much, hasn't looked great. So they're going to hope that Jimmy G can somehow cobble together whatever he can. But you're right, for the 49ers to win, you could see a pathway. Run the ball, control the clock. Deebo Samuel is such a weapon. I mean, when you see him as a receiver, as a running back, he's so fun. And again, Michael Lombardi said to me in the GM shop, if I'm the Niners, I'm putting Deebo Samuel back there on kickoffs because he might break one. And he goes, like, Samuel can do everything right now. He could be their Tyreek Hill right now. So he's definitely an electrifying player. That's part of what the playoffs is so great about. It ends up being a coming out party for people. I think most people know who Deebo Samuel is, but if he keeps playing at this level, he's going to have a lot more people appreciating his talents, particularly those who are fans of the 49ers. So I know the Packers haven't lost at Lambeau. I know Rodgers has been on a ridiculous stretch lately, but I give San Francisco a puncher's chance. Again, their defense really stepped up against the Cowboys. They've made life miserable for Dak Prescott, particularly their defensive line. If the Niners' defensive line can overwhelm the Packers' O-line, which again, it's saying something because Rodgers gets rid of the ball so quickly. He's Marino-like how quick his release is, but at least make him a little uncomfortable. We all know there's one target. His favorite target is Devontae Adams. So try to find a way to double him and blanket him and take care of that, and then run the ball and hope Jimmy G doesn't turn it over. Like, I don't think San Francisco wins, but if they do, I'm with you. Samuel is going to be critical.
So we went from talking about how successful your Eagles have been last week. I figured it was only fair that we bring up how successful your Flyers have been of late, too. I remember last time we talked, I believe it was two alumni legends were taking pot shots, or at least one was taking pot shots at the other about his drafting record and about how he sewered the franchise by drafting Nolan Patrick, and now they've lost nine in a row and they're in action again tonight. Is it full rebuild time? Is it trade Claude Giroux and try to build up everything for the future, Adnan? What has happened to your Philadelphia Flyers?
Yeah, it's been a particularly painful week because there was critical games they played, which, again, on my local TV package, I was able to watch. They played the Bruins, They played the Rangers back-to-back games against their rivals, as big as it gets, aside from the Penguins. Both games, one-goal losses. And then you got the Islanders. You lose to them in the first game of a back-to-back. And then the second game, they could be an overtime loss. I'm like, oh, my God. You got one out of a possible 8 points. You now have 15 points of the wild card. The season's over. Giroux's going to his seventh All-Star game. But I think we could tell him, is, listen, if you want to come back, maybe you can come back. But we should trade you right now. This will help us. It will help us and you. I mean, you can go chase a ring. Like, well, let's discuss a handful of teams you want to go to. Like, the Avalanche are loaded. Pretty sure they're not going to want Claude Giroux. They got enough other talent. But maybe there's a team out there that's looking for another push. We'll get you to go chase a ring. And maybe in the offseason you come back here on a three-year, $18 million deal.
Why don't we see more of that, by the way, Adnan? Like, doesn't that make a lot of – I'm surprised we don't see that actually happen more than it does, because it makes sense, right? He could still be a productive member of the Flyers, but you're not going anywhere this year.
Completely. And I'm with you. I think it's all about honest communication. And I don't know enough about this that you can't have like a handshake deal to be like, I don't think you even have a handshake deal, quite frankly. You say, listen, we're going to trade you because we want to get value back for you. But you are an eternal Flyer. You are top five in all these major categories, and we will make an active effort to re-sign you. Maybe you can't say, here's the terms. I guess that probably would be forbidden. But I think you could say, Claude, we want you here, to be clear. Like, don't be offended by this. And by the way, if you tell us right now you don't want to move, then we won't trade you. How about that? We're both going to be on the same page. If you want to go chase a ring, we'll trade you to get a draft pick and get a player back. But if you really don't want to go, that's fine. And we would like to retain you in the offseason. I'm with you. I don't know why that doesn't happen more often. Maybe star players, they worry about egos if they get rubbed the wrong way. Oh, you guys are getting rid of me. But I'm like, no, I think if you phrase it a certain way, we're not getting rid of you. We're not going anywhere. And we want to keep you, by the way. If we were successful, we'd keep you. How about this? We're going to help both parties. You go chase a ring. If you can come back here, the talent we acquire in the trade for you will help you next season. So I think it's a no-brainer that you deal Giroux. Rasmus risked the line. They obviously gave up a bunch of Sabres. He's a UFA. They've got a couple guys as well. Not really big names. Marty Jones, their backup goaltender. So I think they'll get rid of who they can. But back to the Mark Von Hextall spot, which, as I told you guys before, when I turned 50, that's my dream. I just want to have lunch with Von Hextall. He's my boyhood hero as a kid. So maybe he'll still be the Penguins general manager, but I'm going to go to Pittsburgh. Hey, my name is Adnan Burke. I work at NHL Network. I'm 50 years old. You're my favorite player when I was 9 years old. Can I take you to lunch? And hopefully Ron Hextall says, sure. I just want to hear stories from 87. But back to that, though. Bob Clark was in that room. I kept thinking about that, Logan, after we spoke last week. I'm like, when he was burying Hextall for the Nolan Patrick pick, which, by the way, is egregious. He's absolutely right. And Nolan Patrick was a huge bust, number two overall, and they missed on Cale Makar. But Clark was a part of the team at that time. It wasn't like he was part of the organizational branch. Him and Paul Holmgren, who he's very close to. So I just find it ironic that he's like, oh, what a horrible pick. I'm like, well, dude, you were part of the brass. Like, you could have overruled him. You know what I mean? Like, you're throwing him under the bus, but you're still part of that team. So I still don't understand why Bob Clark was taking shots. And by the way, Bob Clark's been a GM and missed on players. You can go back and look at his draft record and free agency and what he's done. So it still doesn't make a lot of sense. But the Flyers are an absolute mess. I think they had a 10-game losing streak this season, fired Vigneault, at one point had a 6-game unbeaten streak, 5-0-1. You go, here we go. And that's now been followed by a 9-game winless streak. It's absolutely horrible. I can't wait for baseball season to come back.
And by the way, you be careful when you're speaking ill of Martin Jones, a four-year Calgary Hitmen product. So you be careful.
I forgot about the Marty Jones. You know, the other day, Pinder was very offended. I mentioned Adam Fox, how great he is in the Rangers. Oh, God, thanks for bringing him up. Flames fans need to hear about that. I'm like, oh, that's right. I got to be careful about Calgary ties here.
If you can do things to upset Pinder, I don't think anyone on this show is going to be upset with it. So by no means.
Offended, alienate Pinder. No problem.
That's right. That's right. He's Adnan Verk. Just a few more with him. Before we brought you on about earlier today, I guess. I don't even guess how many hours because who knows. But it was earlier today that the Rays announced the Major League Baseball has squashed their proposal to split time between Montreal and Tampa, which I think we all expected. I know that when it was first kind of the idea was first brought up, you know, you were certainly skeptical of it, as all of us were. But I thought the most interesting part today was Sternberg coming out and saying, we think the future of sports is having teams in two cities. Baseball just didn't want to be first. What are you talking about? I don't see that as being the future at all. And the whole idea has been bizarre. And now the Rays are left scrambling. I don't know what the future is in Tampa, but just your thoughts on the entire situation, Adnan.
Yeah, I would think, Will, the future in Tampa is bleak right now because unless they get a new stadium, it doesn't appear like baseball is going to be successful there. How many more years do we have to see a franchise which has run so brilliantly, so efficiently, so successfully, 95-plus wins every year, a World Series appearance a year ago, and yet every year you go, what is going on here? Like, this team can't, they don't have fans. Why is there only 12,000, 15,000 fans or even playoff games? Okay, it's the Trop. Okay, it's the Famous. Whatever it is, you got to fix this. I mean, there's better baseball cities out there, whether it's Nashville or Portland or the great city of Montreal. And as you said, all of us thought this was a harebrained scheme. I just kept thinking, imagine you're a free agent, right? You're like a 32-year-old guy, got a couple kids. Like, why would you consent to having to move your family in the middle of the season? Like, if you're from Austin, Texas, so you live in Austin from November until February, and then you go to spring training in Arizona, let's say, and you – oh, sorry, you've been ALT. Okay, so you go to spring training in Florida, and then all of a sudden you start the year in Tampa, and then – oh, June 10th. Hey, honey, I'm going up to Montreal for the next 3 months. Like, it just never made sense to me. And as much as I would be excited to have baseball back in Montreal, I think this is unfortunate because this clearly was Tampa trying to get a lifeline. It's all right, let's cobble together something. 40 games here, 41 games there, away we go. But MLB squashed it because it looked too inefficient. And for Sternberg's comments, I have no idea what he's talking about. I can't imagine. And I get it. He's not talking about blue blood franchises like the Yankees, the Cubs, or the Red Sox. But could you imagine the Tigers saying, all right, we're going to have half of our games in Detroit and then half of our games in another city in another state? Like, it makes zero sense. So I think he realizes that, unfortunately, it's been a tough sell there in Tampa. And unfortunately, things have to change.
I think it was Nightingale who said the two cities that Major League Baseball would maybe look at, whether it be relocation or expansion, would be Montreal and Nashville, Tennessee. I think pro baseball in Nashville would definitely work. I know they have pro baseball in terms of affiliate. They, you know, the Nashville Sounds are there, but in Major League Baseball, I think Nashville would be a dynamite spot for a team.
The three biggest cities right now, which are really expanding and are hot spots in America, are Charlotte, North Carolina, Nashville, Tennessee, and Las Vegas. Like, if I'm a baseball fan, I'm going, all right, those are the no-brainers right now. And obviously Vegas, the heat is a very big concern. You have to play indoors. You don't play 120 outside. But Nashville, I mean, it's a hot spot right now, and they've clearly got a good sports bench right now between the Titans, number one seed, the Predators, we've seen their success. I'm with you. That, to me, is a home run. But I like the fact that Montreal's still in the mix. I do think those fans deserve a team again. They just need to get, obviously, a better stadium. The Big O just wasn't going to work.
Before we let you go, what's latest on Cinephile? And I thought of you immediately today. It's too bad our friend Pat is not here. I know Logan's a bit of a superhero guy as well. So, Logan, you can chime in after Adnan does his thought in a second. But the new runtime of the Batman movie, 2 hours and 55 minutes.
Wow. I didn't know it was that long. Listen, I'm not a big superhero guy, not to offend Patty and Logan, but the one superhero I do love is Batman. Like, there's no question I'm a huge Batman guy, whether it's Adam West, whether it's Michael Keaton, whether it's Will Arnett, or whether, of course, it's Christian Bale. I do think the Batman is phenomenal. Like, I love the fact he's dark, he's brooding, he's got a hell of a car. You got Alfred, a butler, you got, you know, Catwoman, you got, I mean, they're just, the Joker is one of the greatest villains ever, I think, in any discipline. So the fact that Robert Pattinson's playing him, Pattinson, again, screen hunk, that the girls love him in Twilight, guy's got unbelievable hair, pretty good actor. As Logan knows, he's shown his stuff here, like in Tenet, Christopher Nolan. He was great in The Lighthouse, a black and white independent film that people saw and loved it. So I'm very curious for Pattinson because I think he's got that old good-looking, dark, brooding thing down. But 255, Logan, that's a little tough.
It's not even long enough, Adnan.
Oh, God.
It could be 455 and still be at the theater.
It's going to be a really fun movie. Yeah. No, I'll be there. There's no question about it. And as far as the latest Cinephile, we're getting our Shakespeare on. The Tragedy of Macbeth. It's currently available in theaters and on Apple Plus. I'm not sure for local Albertans, but it stars the great Denzel Washington getting his Shakespeare on. You know, it's something to a great actor to be able to say, okay, I can do Shakespeare. And Denzel is as good as it gets, whether it's Training Day or The Hurricane or Malcolm X, Fences. Seeing him playing Macbeth is really cool. Frances McDormand co-stars, of course, 3-time Academy Award winner herself. Joel Coen directing. It's 1 hour 40. And for people who say, I don't understand what they're saying, I'll tell you this. The subtitles come in handy. My wife is very pro-subtitle. I watched on Apple Plus, and I said, in a theater, this should be kind of tough. I don't speak the Queen's English. This is, you know, language from 500 years ago. But on subtitles, you go, okay, how can I get the gist of this? Okay, this guy's, he's throwing shade at Macbeth. No, he wants to be the king. Okay, this is why he's being avenged. I thought it was a really cool movie. I enjoyed it. We also talked to Tim Roth, great actor. He's been in four Tarantino films, most notably Mr. Orange in Reservoir Dogs. He's in Pulp Fiction. He's in Four Rooms. He was in Hateful Eight. Great actor, British actor. Was Oscar nominated for Rob Roy. He was in Planet of the Apes. Actually, I asked him about that, the Tim Burton film, 2001. He's got a new film called Sundown. So if you're a Tim Roth fan, check out the latest Cinephile.
Do you know why me and Pat would have a liking Tim Roth, Adnan?
Yeah, there's a superhero thing, right? Because I didn't ask him about it, but somebody tweeted me. Why don't you ask him about, it's not Bumblebee, but it's something like that. What is it?
He was in the Hulk, the 2008 version.
He was in the Hulk. But what's the character's name he played?
The character's name that he played in that one?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous, I want to say. What was the character's name? Because somebody tweeted me. They go, ask him about whatever. Maybe it wasn't
Logan's trying to buy time. Yeah, Logan's trying to buy time because he looks it up.
I can't remember what his name was in the movie. Now, the 2008 one was awful. I know like the monster he played, but I don't remember his actual name.
Come on.
maybe something else he was in. There's something else. He was in Shang-Chi. Who was Tim Roth's character's name in Shang-Chi?
He was the Abomination.
As well. The Abomination. That's
the monster that he plays,
Yeah, somebody tweeted me. They go, you have to ask him about the Abomination. I go, whatever you're talking about, that sounds like an Abomination. I'm not going to ask him about that. But, yes, he was. Was that the Hulk? That was the one with Nick Nolte, Ang Lee directed it? Was that one? Or a different Hulk?
The one with Edward Norton in it.
Yeah, that's a bad one. That was not good. Thank God I didn't bring it up.
It was a very good one.
Kelly Kirschner called the last 2.5 minutes of this interview an abomination. Can you not go in the air with research not done, please? Thank you.
Yeah,
one of his biggest pet peeves. Don't ask a question you don't know the answer to. It's always his thing. And Logan just did it in great, great form. Good job, Logan.
You're welcome.
A nice throwback to our pal, Kelly Curry. Adnan, you're a good man. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, Logan, thanks so much. Kelly Curry, we love you.
There he is. Adnan Berg, every Thursday here on The Big Show. It's brought to you by Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar Guest Hotline. And come on in. Enjoy football and hockey game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. One of those instances, Logan, where you just tried to forget the Incredible Hulk and didn't think you'd ever talk about it again, and then here it is.
Yeah, the 2008 one with Ed Norton, it was just an awful version of the Hulk, and as long as I've watched like the new superhero movies, it's been Mark Ruffalo, and I know Tim Roth as the Abomination, that's the monster he plays in, and he's sort of back in these movies, but I couldn't remember his character's name for the life of me, and I hated that movie in 2008 so much, I tried to forget it. You're right.
Well, good work.
Thank you. Some of my best.
I just think you're not a comic book fan. I think the truth's coming out. You know what it was? That movie wasn't 7 hours long. That's why you forgot.
That's true. Yeah, it's true.
It was still probably over 2 hours. Or no, just under two. I'm looking at it right now. 1 hour and 52 minutes. So.
Yeah, not one of my favorites.
The new Batman, 2 hours and 55 minutes. You'll be falling asleep in the theater in no time.
Not for me. There opening night. I can't wait for it.
You and Pat?
Maybe. If he's done Flames Talk in time, maybe we'll go for a little movie date.
One soda, two straws. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Will Malt. We'll take a break, come back, and check in. Go one province to the east with a Calgary Hitman. A brand new role. And a brand new job for Matt Stajan. Stajan joins us next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour three, the program continues. I was just laughing to myself in the break because I just remembered and was reminded of something. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. It is The Big Show. Catch us wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, or Google. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. Our hourly podcasts are posted moments after they are completed. And you can listen at your own leisure. You can also get us a variety of ways. 960 on your AM dial. You can stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. Or you can also tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. I was reminded of when our next guest used to come on weekly and discuss the Calgary Flames. It seemed like every week he would come on and talk to Pat and myself after a bad Calgary Flames loss. And unfortunately, our next guest is coming on to talk to us after another bad loss, this time with a team he's involved with, former Calgary Flame and current assistant coach of the Calgary Hitmen. He is friend of the program, Matt Stajan. Stage, how are you, man? Thanks for doing this.
No, thanks for having me.
I guess just, I mean, first off, you're in Saskatchewan in January, just like you dreamed it, right?
Yeah, we just rolled into Swift Current here. Yeah, beautiful day out. Nice and windy. We're on a trip. It's good to be on the road. After being off for a little bit last week there with a little COVID outbreak.
Yeah, and have you been traveling all year, Matty?
Yeah, I've been traveling with the team. I'm all in. Our schedule was really light at the start of the year, and it's starting to pick up now. And then we had some postponements, so now we're getting jammed with games. We just played four games in 5 nights with travel, and then we have another one tomorrow in Swift Current, another one Sunday. So lots of hockey to catch up on here, but we wouldn't want it any other way.
We talked to you so much over the last couple of years, and I know some of these questions you've certainly answered at different times, but, you know, in your first season now as a coach in the Western Hockey League, you obviously played in this league in the Ontario Hockey League, but under the CHL umbrella, so it's not unfamiliar to you. But, you know, now that you're just about the halfway or just over the halfway point, how do you kind of look back and what are your thoughts now as you're kind of right in the middle of your first season as a coach?
Well, I'm enjoying it, and you really have an appreciation with how much hockey's changed, really. Back to when I was in junior, it was there wasn't as much video, and you know, just things, you know, for the players, you know, they get treated like professionals, and all the things that are there for them to progress their career and to help them. You know, it's come such a long way. So it's nice to see that. They've got a lot of people in their corner trying to help them, and you know, they're all aspiring pros, and it's a competitive league. They're playing in the best junior league in the world. So it's nice to be involved, but definitely, you know, I kind of chuckle at some of the differences with how much the game's changed back when I was in junior in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, even that's changed. Yeah, I know that certainly transportation in terms of a bus is the same, but there's a lot of things that I'm sure are different. And even, I don't know, I never asked you this, but even in your time in the NHL, like when you were leaving the league as a member of the Flames your last couple of years, like did you see some of the same dramatic changes even in your time in the NHL with the Leafs and then the Flames?
Yeah, for sure. It's like everything in our world. Everything keeps progressing and changing and you know, for the better. I think we've come a long way, and it'll continue. So, you know, the game's changed, things off the ice have changed, the approach of, you know, coaches and you know, the way guys train and the mental side of the game, it's all progressed. So yeah, it's eye-opening though, but when you're a player, you're so focused on playing and just getting yourself ready for that next game. And as a coach, you're kind of involved with the whole team, and you have an eye on everything, and you really, it opens your eyes to how much really goes on behind the scenes. You know, being involved with the junior team now, it has been eye-opening.
You know, as I say, we've talked to you a little bit about some of these things before, but, you know, as you were getting later in your career, like, when did, and I know you've coached your kids too, so this is, you know, maybe a little bit unique for you in terms of, this is completely different than coaching your kids, but you know, at what point in your career, Matty, whether it was media or now as a coach, like you started to think of what you could do past playing career. And in the moment, you're focused obviously on playing and trying to play as long as you can. But when did coaching kind of enter your mind as something that you'd like to do post career?
I'd say I would be lying if I said it didn't cross my mind as you're still playing. You know, because you do think about down the road, and You are so focused, but you're a human being, and you're thinking ahead too. And when I left the game, you know, my playing career, I was like, I don't see myself out of the game, staying in it in some way. And obviously coaching was always something that I thought I would get into. And it was just more the time commitment and figuring that part out with a young family. And, you know, so I did the media thing for a bit, stay in the game, stay involved that way. But I don't ever see myself away from the game. And when this opportunity came early this season, I talked with my wife and just thought it was a great opportunity and something I wanted to do. And it's been great. I've enjoyed it. I've had the luxury of working with great people and learning from great people with Steve Hamilton and Trent Cassan as the other coaches. And so it's been a nice transition. And it's as close as you can get to playing. You get the juices going for games. You know, you get emotionally invested into you get that feeling back. You know, there's nothing that compares to a player, but if there's something that's as close, I'd say this is probably it.
We haven't talked to you since you took the job. You just mentioned it there. I mean, how did it come about, Stage? Like, did you talk to Barbs? And obviously, did you have a prior relationship with Steve Hamilton, with Jeff Chenault, with Trent Cassan? Like, how did this all come to be as you behind the bench and a member of the Hitmen coaching staff?
Well, Joel Otto was in this role for over a decade, and he was having some issues physically with his hip, and so he just thought it was time to move on and for himself, Steve called me. He reached out to some of the guys he knows in the city and who would be interested. And it was honestly a phone call in early September out of the blue to come in. And I was interested to have an interview. So it happened really quick. And, you know, I'm thankful that my name got brought up and I was able to go in and do an interview. And I met with Jeff and Steve and Trent. And, a few days later, I was offered the job. So it happened quick. And I'm thankful that it happened that way. And it's been great so far.
He is Matt Stajan, former Calgary Flame, former Toronto Maple Leaf, now assistant coach with the Calgary Hitmen. He's our guest here on The Big Show. Logan?
Stage, good to chat with you, man. I guess just sort of following up on some of the coaching stuff, what's the day-to-day look like with you? Are you with the forward group, power play? What kind of day-to-day stuff do you handle with the team?
Yeah, so I mostly work with the forwards. But, you know, as a coaching staff, we're very in it together. We go over everything together, but you know, my job is mostly with the forwards. I run the forwards in the games, and and it's kind of, you know, you cut video and do some pregame prep for the guys, I've slowly, gradually, you know, taken on a little bit more and more here, but it's we treat it as a group, and it's been great. So, you know, getting to know the kids and the guys on the team, and not kids, I guess they're young men, some of them, and it's just been nice and trying to share my knowledge with them and help them along. Like I said, they're all trying to be, you know, professional, aspiring pros and take hockey to the next level. So you try and help them, but at the same time, we're a team and we're trying to win, and everything that goes into building that winning culture, we're trying to pass on to these young kids. So, It's been nice.
I know it's been a while since you played junior hockey, Matt, but you spent a lot of time in the O, and now you're, you know, getting a close-up look of what life's like in the WHL. Do you see a big difference between the two leagues when it comes to junior hockey?
No, it's very similar. Like, yeah, back when I played, I'd say there was always, you know, the Western League was, you know, big and tough, and the Quebec League was, you know, all scoring and high scoring games, and the Ontario League, which is where I played, was kind of in the middle. But I'd say it's all kind of closed in together. It's very similar, especially with the new rules. So when I played, it was still the hooking and clutching and grabbing. Now, you know, and it's been almost, you know, 18 years, I think, since all the rules changed in hockey with that stuff. So you've seen the game change a lot. And I can't say we haven't played a team in Ontario. We're only playing our conference right now. So,
yeah.
But it's very comparable though. I don't see a big difference, and And the skill level of these kids, like, it's, you know, it's amazing to see how skilled these kids are now. And now we're trying to teach them the approach of, you know, playing as a team and, you know, reading the game, reading the game properly to, you know, to kind of form yourself into being a pro. Cause, you know, there's a lot to the game. It's not just skill stuff that all the videos you see on Instagram, it's, there's a lot more to hockey than that. The skill's nice to have and you need it, but, we're trying to teach, teach these guys to be well-rounded hockey players because that's what it takes to get to that next level.
Anything caught you off guard about your first year coaching with the Hitmen? Anything that's really surprised you that maybe you didn't expect going in? And I know that's hard to say when we live in a pandemic world and you have these giant gaps and surprises on a day-to-day basis, but anything that, you know, you sort of didn't expect heading into year one, Matty?
Not really. You know, I think because you kind of – I was in the NHL at a time when it was getting younger and younger. So I think you sometimes forget that how young some of these guys on our team are. You know, they're coming in at 15, 16 years old. So sometimes you forget because it is competitive. It is the best junior league in the world. And you have to kind of remind yourself that some of these kids were playing midget hockey, you know, not too long ago and not that much hockey because of the pandemic. So, but it's been great. I, that's an adjustment coming from playing junior in Ontario or, you know, playing in the NHL and being on chartered flights. That's a little different, but, we have a great group, all the players on the Hitmen, the kids, they're all good people. And our dressing room has been a really good place to be through this time. Cause you know, we've all had our challenges and, you know, for the players, know that they can't do much. It's not a regular year with everything that's going on in society and COVID and all that. So, you know, they've done a really good job of, just being good people and getting through it and sticking together. And as coaches, we've admired that about them. And, we're just really happy that we're able to play a lot of games here and have a push for the playoffs and see where it can take us.
My last one for you, man, and I guess it's an interesting perspective that maybe you can give because of your experience. Because if I remember right, you went straight from playing with Belleville. You played in the NHL your rookie year, right? Like you played most of your first rookie year with the Leafs, didn't you?
Yeah, I had one AHL game just at the end of the year, but I did. I went junior to the NHL, and then looking back, then there was a lockout year, so I was able to go back to play a year in the American League, which really helped me because I got to play a lot at the pro level early, where that first year in the NHL, it was great to be in the NHL, but I wasn't playing and developing probably as much because I was playing, 10, 12 minutes a night. So, but I did, I made the quick transition and was fortunate to play at a young age.
Yeah, because I guess the question I would have is I'm sure so many of these kids have that focus on, going pro right away and, wanting to be an NHLer. Because, you're right, we see it all the time now. Guys get drafted at 18 years old and take on major NHL roles sometimes. But it can be a different experience for everybody, right? All these kids, if they go on and keep playing hockey, are going to play in, different leagues, different scenarios. It's not going to be a straight-to-pro approach for everybody, but for you, that's how it was, and I'm sure you can relate to some of these kids who are in those positions and know how fast things are going to change over the next year or two of their hockey lives, hey?
Yeah, and the thing is, when unless you're a star and, you're going to go to the NHL right away and play on the power play and play those minutes, you got to learn the defensive side of the game because, as a young guy, you only really get – and the league is getting younger, but the quicker you can learn to be a player that can be trusted on the ice, that's what I try and tell these guys. You're going to get more opportunity to play, at the highest level. And that's just the fact of the matter because, not everybody's Connor McDavid and goes up there and, will play on the first power play unit. So the focus is to teach them, the defensive side of the puck and being a guy you can trust and if you're a guy who has that skill, you're going to get your opportunity a lot quicker And looking back at the start of my career, that's the only reason I was able to play in the NHL at a young age, because I could slot into that third, fourth line role and be trusted at a young age, and that's why I got to play at a young age.
Just a couple more with Matt Stajan as he joins us right now on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960. Two more, and we'll let you go, Matty. I guess now put your coaching hat on. I mentioned it off the top. It was a tough loss for your team last night, 8-2 against Moose Jaw. What are some of the big takeaways, and I guess what went wrong for your group last night?
Yeah, well, not much went right, and we don't like to make excuses, with the way we played. But we weren't ready to play, and we've talked about that. And we came off a break, with a little COVID break, where we were shut down for a week, and that was our fourth game in 5 days coming out of that. So we were a tired group, and tomorrow is a chance to rebound for us, and that's the approach we're taking. We'll shut the door on that game and move on, and now we need to see a response from the guys, and I'm pretty positive and confident that our guys will be able to do that tomorrow night.
And final one for you. You had a first-hand look. Are you on the bench for games, Matt, or does it depend on the arena?
No, I'm on the bench every game. Yeah.
I was going to say, you get the first-hand look, and for a lot of listeners, would love to see your scouting report. You're obviously focusing on your team, but Tuesday in Regina, what were your takeaways, your impressions of Connor Bedard?
Yeah, he's a player. I think we played him earlier in the year, and he wasn't as noticeable. But last game we played him, the guys were saying he had that World Junior bump, so he came back from the World Juniors, and you can see that he's really confident in playing with the skill that we've all heard he has, and he controls the game out there. He's a dynamic player. He's going to be a top pick in the NHL for a reason. He had exceptional status, so we have our hands full with him. When he's on the ice, you need to know it, because he controls the game. He slows it down. He's a special player, and sometimes you forget how young he is, and it was crazy. I thought he was older than he was when I was talking with Trent after the game, and he's still he's a 16-year-old, and it's just crazy to think that he has that much talent that age. So he'll be a special one for sure, and I think anybody that watches junior hockey and can have a chance to go see a guy in the next couple of years, because that's probably all you'll get him at that level. Take your chance to watch him really have success at this level and dominate the league.
Would love to break down player by player, but don't want to take too much of your time. Appreciate it today, Matt. Enjoy Swift Current. Good luck tomorrow. And I'm sure we'll talk again soon. Appreciate this today, though, Matt. Thanks, Stage.
Yeah. Anytime, guys. Have a good day.
You bet. There he is, Matt Stajan, former Calgary Flame, former Toronto Maple Leaf, and now assistant coach with the Calgary Hitmen. He joined us from Swift Current on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. Logan, we got to get out of here, my friend. That's another day.
Big Friday show tomorrow ahead of the NFL playoffs, buddy. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, get your picks ready. I told you I'm going to blow you out of the water, so I need to get mine prepared. For Logan Gordon, my name is Will Nall. Aaron Howell has been our producer. Thanks to Lou, thanks to Stage, and thanks to Adnan for jumping on today. You can catch it all on the podcast, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on a Friday. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.